Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso, the network for social justice. Civil rights icon Dolores Huerta, the 95-year-old co-founder of the Farm Workers' Rights Movement, was in San Diego last week to accept a major contribution to her foundation, and we'll share her inspiring words with you on our show today. The Trump administration has slashed funding for libraries and museums, and we'll have reactions on how that could impact libraries right here in San Diego and East County. Local business leaders held a press conference to speak out against President Donald Trump's tariffs, and they predict negative impacts on San Diego's regional economy, including raising home prices. Federal immigration authorities conducted a raid at a painting company in El Cajon, arresting the owner and several undocumented workers. Congresswoman Sarah Jacobs, a Democrat, held a virtual town hall last week, and we'll share highlights on our show today. On Green Scene, hear about Helix Water District's efforts to establish a vehicle fleet running on renewable energy. Plus, hear about how you can sign up online to speak at county supervisor meetings now. Indivisible North County held an empty chair town hall meeting after Republican Congressman Daryl Issa refused to hold a town hall with his constituents for 7 years. And a chicken occupied the seat reserved for Issa. Hear about some of the questions his constituents asked on our show today. On Destination East County, learn about some fun and festive events coming up in April, including flower festivals, Easter egg hunts, an aerobatics competition in Borrego Springs, Lakeside's Rodeo and Western Days Parade, outdoor roller skating at Viejas, bunny rides aboard a historic train in Campo, a Roaring Twenties party atop Mount Helix for the park's centennial celebration, a taste of Lakeside, a mystery dinner theater in El Cajon, and the Cheers to the Valley Wine Tasting Festival in Ramona. La Mesa has a new program to make e-bikes more affordable, and we'll have details. Then from Public News Service, we'll have some national news stories, including Donald Trump's desire to run for a third term as president, even though the Constitution prohibits this. Plus, new tariffs are planned and more. From California News Service, hear how rural Californians could be hurt by cuts in banking oversight, and learn about a bill that would make oil and gas companies pay for insurance losses in California tied to climate change that caused those big fires. And finally, El Cajon is rolling out a new ride-sharing program, and we'll have details on how you can participate. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. On Monday, March 24th, civil rights icon Dolores Huerta spoke at a press conference in San Diego. At the conference, Gomez trial attorneys presented a $10,000 check to the Dolores Huerta Foundation and recognized Huerta's contributions to civil rights protections at a time when social justice reforms are under attack. Dolores Huerta is an iconic leader of the farm workers' movement, one of the most influential labor activists of the 20th century, and a leader of the Chicano civil rights movement as well. Experiencing discrimination is what shaped Huerta. She is the recipient of many honors, ranging from an Eleanor Roosevelt Human Rights Award in 1998 to the Presidential Medal of Freedom in 2012. As of 2015, she was a board member of the Feminist Majority Foundation, the secretary-treasurer and co-founder of United Farm Workers of America, which she helped co-found along with Cesar Chavez, as well as president of the Dolores Huerta Foundation. Huerta was invited by Shane Harris, a civil rights activist and director of communications at Gomez Trial Attorneys. Harris spoke about the work that Gomez Trial Attorneys has been doing, taking on numerous cases in defense of those who need it most.
I think that it's just really important that we center in on why we're here, right? Gomez Trial Attorneys is not just your ordinary law firm, right? It is not just a law firm, but we are a law firm that believes concretely in the importance of advancing and fighting for civil rights in this community and abroad.
He also spoke about cases where defendants have no other recourse.
We're raising our hand and we're saying we're ready to step up to the plate for those cases that no one else may want to take, to be a voice for the voiceless.
Alongside Harris was the CEO of Gomez Trial Attorneys, John Gomez, one of the most successful trial lawyers in the country. He introduced Huerta and her achievements, illustrating the importance of legal work for those afflicted by racism and deportations under the Trump administration. Gomez, a passionate activist, emphasized the need for action and how much Huerta has influenced many within his firm.
It's time for this community to speak with the strong voice that belongs to it. You know, these are dangerous times, you know, for many. You know, people in their homes or places of business or places of worship. It's not a coincidence that, you know, we still turn to you as our leader. You know, you are our queen, you know, our at the front, like Braveheart, with your sword out. And so, you know, that's why we're so honored to have you with us and so pleased to present just one small little bit of token of appreciation and support of the work that you do.
The conference also featured a number of other speakers from within Gomez Trial Attorneys, many of whom are part of San Diego's Latino community. Each expressed their gratitude and admiration for Huerta, acknowledging the inspiration she has been for decades. One such lawyer, Perla Cuervas, commented on the personal significance Huerta had in her life.
Her legacy has profoundly shaped my own path. As once an immigrant navigating in a new world, I found strength in her resilience, in her story. As a Latina breaking into spaces not built for me, I found courage in her defiance. And now as a leader, I carry her message forward to my children, ensuring that those that come after me don't just dream of success. They claim it knowing that they deserve it.
Huerta, who took to the mic toward the end of the conference, is a small but mighty speaker. At 95 years old, she continues to command the room and talk clearly and passionately in defense of marginalized communities. Here, she speaks about the focus of her foundation.
The work that we do with the Lawrence Huerta Foundation, we work in these communities where we have a lot of people that they don't know what their rights are. They don't know what their privileges are. They don't know that they have the power to change things. And this is what we do. We educate them and make them understand you cannot have a democracy if people do not participate, and that they are going to be victims if they do not participate. And we see that playing out right now in our country.
Alongside the defense of democracy, Huerta touched on a number of other topics. Among these, she expressed her own gratitude for the work the attorneys do, sharing her recent experiences that highlight the need for strong lawyers to defend organizations against government attacks. Huerta, among many things, is a board member for the environmental organization Climate United, which, after receiving a grant from the EPA dedicated to environmental projects focusing on Native American reservations, lost funding from the government under this new administration. Her fellow board members then had FBI agents showing up at their door asking questions regarding their activity within the environmental activist group. She claims that now more than ever, the work that attorneys do is vital in defending activists and their organizations. She shared stories from her past experiences, including those working with Cesar Chavez and the United Farm Workers of America, where the success of the movement depended on civil rights attorneys defending their right to free speech. Huerta ended the conference with her iconic chant, Si se puede. Here is the powerful and mighty Dolores Huerta.
So again, thank you very much. And as I said, we will put this money to good use, okay? And we are here to fight the fascism, right? We are here to fight the fascism, and we're going to make it happen. We're going to stop it, and we're going to bring back our democracy. And can I do the chant? Is it okay
yes,
I do the chant?
Yes.
Okay. Some of you know the chant, okay? So I ask people to stand up. Everybody stand up. And then I'm going to ask you the two very important questions, and I want you to shout the answer. And it's okay, we shout, right?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
But I want you to shout the answer so loud that the haters can hear us, okay? We know who they are, okay? So the first question I'm going to ask you, who's got the power? You're going to say, we've got the power. I'm going to say, what kind of power? You're going to say, attorney power, all right? Okay, let's go. Okay, who's got the power?
We got the power.
Okay, a little bit louder. One more time. Okay, a little bit louder. Okay. Who's got the power?
We got the power.
What kind of power?
Attorney power.
Are we going to use our attorney power to defend our democracy the way that you've been doing? What do we say? Se puede?
Si se puede.
Se puede.
See Cesar
Puente. Let's all do it with an organized hand clap. Let's go.
Cesar Puente. 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 Cesar Puente.
Cesar Puente. Cesar Puente. Cesar Puente.
On March 14th, President Trump issued an executive order to slash funding from the Institute of Museum and Library Services, the only federal agency dedicated to funding library services. In addition to drastically cutting money for national repositories of knowledge, such as the Smithsonian Institute, the action also means huge cuts for local libraries and museums. Patrick Stewart, CEO of the Library Foundation in San Diego, says without this funding, the San Diego Public Library System's 37 branches will lose a significant tool for maintaining, delivering, and developing innovative services for patrons. He says these cuts will impact a wide range of San Diegans, from a parent whose child relies on the homework center at their neighborhood library to the entrepreneur learning how to write a business plan at the Startup Center at the Central Library. The library is a core public service and a community cornerstone that needs to be safeguarded for our city's future, Stewart adds. The San Diego Public Library System uses federal funding distributed through the IMLS to support several local initiatives. Loss of funding will negatively impact San Diegans who participate in programs every day, including lunch at your library, adult literacy programs, youth training and career development, as well as entrepreneur and workforce development programs. Clarissa McLaughlin in Santee is an author, editor, and children's book illustrator. In an email to East County Magazine, she says, I have relied on libraries my entire life. I have read a plethora of library books since early childhood. I volunteered at my local library in high school, and now, and as an adult, I'm working to get my own books into libraries. Libraries are both an essential service to the American people and are critical to my professional industry, says McLaughlin. She has relied on the library as a polling place, as well as listening to audiobooks, both for fun and for writing classes. McLaughlin says she wants to see more funding so her library can open on Sundays again. My library is well-loved and well-needed. It cannot be defunded, she concludes. Dulcura resident Connie Kilpatrick notes that libraries today provide more than books, serving as community centers that support education, career, and personal development. She told East County Magazine, my library has been a cornerstone of my learning journey, adding that she's utilizing libraries to attend author talks, technology workshops, and lectures. In today's digital age, free access to information is more critical than ever, and my library ensures that everyone, regardless of financial background, can benefit from books, online resources, and the internet, she says. Libraries also serve as a community gathering place that welcomes people of all ages for events, discussions, and support groups, she says. Her library has helped people with job searches, resume writing, and skill-building programs that empower them in their career, as well as students needing a quiet place to study and entrepreneurs researching market trends. In addition, the library plays a vital role in preserving local history and culture through archives, genealogy services, and historical exhibits, safeguarding our heritage, she says. For those in rural or underserved areas, the library is a lifeline, Kilpatrick concludes, adding, it bridges the digital divide by offering free internet access, computers, and technical assistance, ensuring that no one is left behind in the information age. More importantly, it provides a safe and inclusive environment where everyone is treated with dignity and respect. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
San Diego leaders held a press conference Wednesday warning San Diegans of severe consequences that President Donald Trump's tariffs could have on the local economy. Trump has announced plans to impose a 25% additional tariff on imports from Mexico and Canada, as well as a 10% tariff on imports from China. Trump said he is taking the action to hold Mexico, Canada, and China accountable to their promises to halt illegal immigration and to stop fentanyl and other drugs from flowing into the United States. San Diego City Councilmember Raul Campillo, chair of the City of San Diego's Economic Development and Intergovernmental Relations Committee, was joined by business leaders from San Diego industries expecting to be affected by the tariffs. Campillo urged the federal administration to reverse course before the tariffs damage local businesses and housing affordability. Industries that would be impacted include manufacturing, construction, healthcare, as well as trade. Campillo and business leaders are urging the current administration to pursue alternative solutions that would strengthen American industries without hurting consumers. Councilman Campillo says, San Diego thrives because of trade, adding that, we depend on strong economic partnerships with Mexico, Canada, and beyond. The tariffs threaten the economic stability of our region, putting jobs at risk, raising prices on everyday goods, and making it even harder for working families to afford to live here, Campillo concluded. Economic experts predict that the coming tariffs are expected to cost the average American household up to $2,000 more per year. San Diego families will be among the hardest hit because of an already high cost of living. The White House reports that in 2023, the U.S. trade deficit in goods was the world's largest at over $1 trillion. While Trump is calling April 2nd Liberation Day, Campillo reflects, there's nothing liberating about raising prices on hardworking San Diegans and putting local jobs at risk. Campillo says the tariffs will threaten everything from groceries to housing to healthcare costs at a time when families are already struggling. He said the issue is not about partisan politics. It's about protecting San Diego's economy, adding that, as an elected representative, I am standing with San Diego's business community to say loud and clear, this trade war is reckless and it must stop. San Diego's geographic position and close ties with Mexico make the region particularly vulnerable to economic instability caused by tariffs. With $63 billion in imports and $33 billion in exports flowing through San Diego in 2023, new trade restrictions could create severe economic disruptions. San Diego Regional Chamber of Commerce Vice President of International and Public Affairs, Kania Zamaripa, says that tariffs create unnecessary economic barriers that disrupt cross-border trade, increase costs of businesses, and threaten jobs in our region. Zamaripa notes that San Diego thrives on seamless trade with Mexico, the region's top trading partner. These tariffs will harm businesses of all sizes, Zamaripa predicts. Home construction is expected to be one of the hardest hit industries. The cost of materials is expected to rise dramatically, with the changes potentially worsening San Diego's housing crisis. San Diego County Building Industry Association CEO Lori Fehler said that the new tariffs on America's largest trading partners are projected to raise the cost of imported construction materials by more than $3 billion, increasing the price of a new home between $7,500 and $10,000. Fehler calls this the wrong approach, especially in San Diego, where she notes, we're already facing a severe housing affordability crisis. The leaders are urging President Trump to reconsider these tariffs and protect local communities from harmful economic consequences. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Juliet Sanders.
Our East County Magazine radio show needs volunteers, and so does our award-winning news website at eastcountymagazine.org. If you would like to help write scripts, learn reporting skills, research topics for our news team, or have an on-air voice to be the media, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617.
Federal immigration authorities raided the San Diego Powder and Protective Coatings Company on Magnolia Avenue in the unincorporated area of El Cajon on March 27th. A search warrant accuses the company of hiring undocumented workers as well as fraud and misuse of visas. Sean Gibson, ICE Homeland Security Investigations Special Agent, said agents arrested fewer than 20 people while executing a criminal search warrant, 10 News reports. The arrests included administration arrests for violation of immigration laws, as well as criminal arrests. Employees told KPBS that around 50 workers were handcuffed and forced to stand in the sun with requests for water denied while agents verified immigration status for each person. U.S. citizens were later freed to leave, while others were taken into custody and faced potential deportation. Blanca Corona said that her husband, a youth soccer coach, and the family's primary wage earner, was detained. "We have four kids," she told KPBS, holding back tears. Corona said she and her children are citizens and that the family had hired a lawyer to help her husband adjust his status, but he was arrested anyway. According to 10 News, agents with Homeland Security Investigations, Customs and Border Protection, along with what appeared to be several other law enforcement agencies, participated in the enforcement sweep. El Cajon Police did not participate. The action is part of a nationwide crackdown on undocumented immigrants carried out by the Trump administration. A spokesperson for Congresswoman Sarah Jacobs, whose district includes El Cajon, said her office has sent inquiries to ICE and DHS to learn more and to assure that people's rights and due process are being followed. Serious questions over mistreatment of deported immigrants by the Trump administration have been raised. The administration deported some migrants to the infamous prison at Guantanamo Bay, but later returned those detainees to facilities in the U.S. after protests and a congressional oversight visit. Some may be returned to their home countries or to other nations. Recently, the Trump administration sent some migrants, allegedly violent Venezuelan gang members, to a prison in El Salvador, infamous for human rights abuses. The administration officials defied a judge's order to turn the planes around and were flying migrants to El Salvador amid concerns over due process rights violations. The judge is weighing contempt of court charges against administration officials. Meanwhile, the Trump Justice Department has asked the Supreme Court to intervene to allow the deportations under the Alien Enemies Act of 1798. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is John Tidwell.
You're listening to the East County Magazine show on KNSJ, bringing you voices and views from across our inland region. You can find more local news and events, volunteer, and support our nonprofit news in the public interest at www.eastcountymagazine.org.
Democratic Congresswoman Sarah Jacobs held a virtual town hall on March 22nd in which she answered questions and addressed comments and queries from an audience that reached 1,200 viewers. Jacobs acknowledged the majority of her updates were bleak for those opposed to Trump's policies and proposals, but then she pointed to recent decisions in which judges ruled against Trump, including a temporary restraining order to block the administration from deporting hundreds of Venezuelans under the Alien Enemies Act, as proof of progress. Jacobs acknowledged, "Yes, we know Trump ignored the court order, but I think it's important that the court order happened, and now we're pushing Republicans to stand up and respect the courts, because they have privately told me that their red line is Trump not abiding by a court order." Other rulings have blocked Trump's ban on transgender service members and, most recently, barred the Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE, from accessing Social Security records. Jacobs represents California's 51st Congressional District, which includes Central and Eastern San Diego. She has been in town holding multiple meetings with residents and stakeholders recently, including at Rady Children's Hospital, where she discussed potential cuts to Medicaid funding. She began her town hall by outlining her frustration with the federal spending bill that was approved by Congress in what she believes was a missed opportunity to push back against the Trump administration. Jacobs said, "I voted against this bill because I am very concerned about some of what was in there, including cuts to veterans care, cuts to rent subsidies, cuts to Army Corps of Engineer construction projects, and more." She voiced disappointment in some Senate Democrats for failing to block the budget bill, though California's two senators both voted against the measure. Jacobs shared her opposition to the president's use of the Alien Enemies Act to deport migrants. She is a co-sponsor of a bill to repeal the 1798 law. The congresswoman joined a recent bipartisan oversight delegation on a trip to Guantanamo Bay to see conditions in which migrants were being held there. She said, "After our oversight visit, they actually moved all the immigrants who were there back to the continental United States, I think because even the Republicans realized there was no real reason for the cost and the cruelty." Questions for Jacobs ranged from mass firings by Doge and challenges to his leaders, billionaire Elon Musk, to complaints about Senator Chuck Schumer, a subject of criticism for his role in passage of the spending bill. All questions were pre-submitted. Some constituents in the town hall feared for democracy itself, but Jacobs tried to reassure them. What we've seen from other countries is that if we could put together a broad-based pro-democracy movement, she said, we actually have a pretty good chance of getting a better democracy on the other side. She also told constituents they could support congressional efforts to halt Musk's actions by filing a Freedom of Information Act, or FOIA, request for a report on the information that Doge has accessed about them personally. Doing so, said Jacobs, is one way that you can really help us do our constitutional oversight job. She urged constituents to send those results to her office, which would help her and her staff understand what information Doge continues to access. She said her office will post information on her website about how to file FOIA requests. Congresswoman Sarah Jacobs plans another town hall, this one in person, on April 22nd in El Cajon. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is John Tidwell with a Green Scene Report. Helix Water District isn't just about water, it's also about energy, power, and air. On Tuesday, the district with roots dating back to 1885 broke ground at its El Cajon Operations Center as part of the district's transition to a zero-emission vehicle fleet through electrification. The $11 million electrification project will install nearly 90 high-speed vehicle chargers at the district's operations center. Helix Water District is transitioning 86 vehicles and installing nearly 6 megawatts of charging infrastructure. The estimated completion date is April 2026. The project is thought to be the first of its kind in California, Helix officials say. Helix is collaborating with the San Diego County Air Pollution Control District, SDG&E, a disadvantaged community EV charger rebate program, and strategic allies for funding and expertise. The district is electrifying its vehicle fleet to meet the state of California's advanced clean fleet requirements. Helix expects to complete this project without significantly impacting water rates. In 2024, the state of California's advanced clean fleet regulation required that 50% of all new medium and heavy-duty vehicles purchased by public agencies be zero-emission vehicles. That number increases to 100% in 2027. With the regulation, public agencies will need to deploy charging infrastructure that will power their new fleets for both daily and emergency operations use. The charging stations will not only serve the district's fleet, but will also be available to surrounding agencies to utilize during emergencies as they work to electrify their own fleets. Helix Water District board member Mark Grasick says Helix has already reduced its energy use by 15% and its carbon footprint by 50%. He says this project will be a model for other agencies working to electrify their fleets and help the cities we serve meet their climate action plan goals. The Helix Operations Center in El Cajon houses the majority of the district's fleet, which transports crews responsible for the maintenance of 742 miles of pipeline, valves, hydrants, and meters for its nearly 280,000 customers. The project has been funded in part with nearly $9 million through grants and rebates, with Helix paying the remaining $2 million. This is a public service announcement from the County of San Diego. Have you ever wanted to speak about an issue at a San Diego County Supervisors meeting? The county is introducing changes to make it easier to do so. Until now, anyone who wanted to speak at a board meeting had to fill out a speaker slip before the meeting started, either a written slip in person at the board meeting or electronically online if they wanted to talk by phone. Starting April 2nd, No more paper slips will be required. No more waiting in line, and no more waiting until the day of the meeting to request to speak. Anyone can submit a simplified speaker slip online using their phone, laptop, or other device at any time before the board starts taking public comment on the item during the meeting. If you're speaking by phone, the new system will even call you when the meeting starts and give you real-time notifications about where you are in line to talk on the item or items you plan to speak about. County staff will still be available at board meetings if people need help to sign up to speak. To sign up to speak online, visit publiccomment.sandiegocounty.gov. Click on the meeting date for the meeting you want to comment at, then click on the blue Register box at the bottom of the page. Then fill out the form, which can be translated into multiple languages, and mark whether you're attending in person or virtually by phone. You can also request an interpreter and ask to be called when the meeting starts, as well as to subscribe to updates on future Board of Supervisors meetings. Then click Register again, and you'll receive an email confirming your request to speak. Additional information is available through the Board of Supervisors Clerk's Office.
You're listening to the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for San Diego's inland region. Now, stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
Hundreds of constituents in Republican Congressman Darrell Issa's district gathered at an empty chair town hall event at the California Center for the Arts on March 23rd. A standing room only crowd in the venue that holds about 400 people expressed a variety of concerns about everything from health care needs and veteran services to immigration and education. The event was live streamed on social media. Here's a soundbite from Issa's constituents at that event. The empty chair town hall was organized by Indivisible North County San Diego after Issa failed to hold a live town hall meeting for the past 7 years. Indivisible North County San Diego is part of a national nonprofit working to protect progressive values and build resistance to the Trump agenda. Indivisible North County San Diego says its resistance is built on values of inclusion, tolerance, fairness, and nonviolence. Panelists included Allison Gill, a podcaster and owner of MSW Media, Inc., and five community leaders who answered questions that would have been directed at Issa if he had been there. Gill said, "Darrell Issa, step back. My freedom is protected by the Constitution. My government that you and Elon Musk are trying to sledgehammer is protected by laws and Congress." The panelists with Mills were Escondido Deputy Mayor Consuelo Martinez, Vista Unified School District Board Member Cipriano Vargas, Danny Jackson, Max Disposti, founder and executive director of the North County LGBTQ Resource Center, and Joe Howd. A man in a chicken mask also joined the panel, reflecting the group's claim that Issa is chicken for avoiding a town hall meeting. The empty chair town hall was part of a nationwide effort encouraged by Indivisible National during the congressional recess from March 13th through 23rd. The National Indivisible Group is also spearheading a protest set for noon on April 5th at the Civic Center in downtown San Diego. Again, that's April 5th at the Civic Center downtown. Attendees at the local March 23rd town hall said they were looking for answers about why Republicans in Congress seem to have forgotten that there are three branches of government and have ceded their authority to the executive branch. Constituent Randy James asked the absent Issa, "Please explain to me and those in the 48th Congressional District why Issa has been supporting Russia and removing support for Ukraine. How does that help the U.S. and our 80-year-old international alliance?" he wanted to know. Physician and scientist Dr. Steve Shrewsbury asked, "Do you support the indiscriminate apprehension of undocumented migrant workers, noting that migrants supply 50% to 70% of workers on farms? Where do you propose these workers be shipped to, and who will replace them in keeping Southern California agriculture and construction running?" he asked. Others asked why Issa is in favor of cutting thousands of jobs. What is going on with the Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE, that has eliminated some agencies and implemented mass firings at others? And why the government feels it has to slash billions of dollars from the Department of Health and Human Services, which manages Medicaid? Audience members said they wanted to know why ISA doesn't appear to support Dreamers and those in DACA, the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, a program that provides temporary protection from deportation and work authorization to people who came to America as children, though it doesn't offer a path to citizenship. Several there said it seems ISA has forgotten that America is made up of immigrants, and others felt ISA is rubber-stamping orders from President Donald Trump. Those at the two-hour event were adamant that their collective voice and individual voices are not being heard by ISA nor the current administration in Washington, D.C. Indivisible North County San Diego spokesperson Pamela Albergo said that ISA hasn't held a town hall since 2017, but that the concerns of his constituents haven't gone away. The Times of San Diego reports that San Diego's four other congressional members, in all fairness, all Democrats, have not held live town halls in the past year, though Congresswoman Sarah Jacobs just did a virtual town hall, and she's planning a live town hall April 22nd in El Cajon. ISA's constituents say they have reached out to his office, but have been turned away. ISA represents the 48th Congressional District, which encompasses much of San Diego's East County, as well as southwestern Riverside County. Asked about the town hall event, ISA did not respond, but Jonathan Wilcox, communications director for the congressman, told East County Magazine that in his more than 30 years of experience, town halls are very hit or miss for constituents. He said, constituents over the years have told us the format didn't work for them, not able to ask a question, not able to stand in line for a long time, adding that town halls were more common years ago. Wilcox said only about one of every 50 callers asks the office about town halls. ISA also has done two mobile offices as a way to reach people who were in areas not close to the population centers, Wilcox said, as well as speaking to Vietnam veterans at veterans events. Panelist Gill said that ISA, who is a veteran, states on his website, "I love veterans. Veterans are the backbone of this country." But, she asked, "Then why are you helping slash 83,000 jobs from the Department of Veterans Affairs?" adding, "Daryl ISA doesn't care about us." Claire Strong is a senior consultant for Galvanized Strategies, a company that provides strategic public affairs consulting and leadership services, and focuses on marketing, communications, government affairs, community engagement, and executive leadership. Strong says that empty chair events make a strong statement, but traditional town halls where all parties are present are far more productive for resolving issues. She states, "In my experience moderating contentious public meetings, I've seen how direct face-to-face dialogue creates understanding and encourages real solutions, something an empty chair situation simply can't facilitate. Town halls allow people on both sides of an issue to feel seen and heard," she concludes, "which is essential when it comes to addressing community concerns. When everyone is in the room," she says, "it leads to more constructive outcomes, while the absence of one side can have the opposite effect." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery. Welcome to East County Magazine's Destination East County, bringing you all of the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County each week. This is Miriam Raftery with this week's Destination East County. It's springtime here in East County and the season for flower festivals, including Daffodil Days and a Lilac Festival, both in Julian, plus Sweet Pea Days in Flint Springs. There are also Easter egg hunts and bunny rides aboard a historic train in Campo. Plus, you can watch Aerobatics Daredevils take wing in a competition in Borrego Springs. Head to Lakeside's Rodeo and Western Days Parade, or roller skate outdoors at the Viejas Outlet Center in Alpine. This April, you can also enjoy a Roaring Twenties Centennial Party atop Mount Helix, a Taste of Lakeside event, a Mystery Dinner Theater in El Cajon, a Taste of Lakeside, plus a wine tasting festival in Ramona. And here are the details. Southern California's largest outdoor roller rink will open for spring and summer season at Viejas Outlet Mall on April 4th. Skate rentals are available. After skating, visitors can also enjoy shop or dining at the Outlet Center's many stores and eateries. You can learn more at viejasoutletcenter.com. The Pacific Southwest Railway Museum in Campo invites you to come aboard the Bunny Train departing Saturdays and Sundays from April 5th through 20th. Trains depart at 10:30, 1 p.m., and 2:30 p.m. After your ride through our beautiful backcountry, a treasure trove of hidden eggs awaits youngsters at the museum's exhibit building. Children can trade eggs for prizes and meet the Easter Bunny, who will be chilling out in his charming garden, ready for cuddles and photo opportunities. For more information and reservations, you can visit the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum site at psrm.org. Parkway Plaza Regional Shopping Mall invites you and the family to hop on over for an Easter egg extravaganza on April 5th from 1 to 3 p.m. Activities include balloon art, crafts, a scavenger hunt, prizes, and a box lunch, plus photos with the Easter Bunny and 3D printed eggs while supplies last. The first 100 registrants will also receive bunny ears and a goodie bag. You can find event details and register at visitparkwayplaza.com. The Circle Players will be performing the dinner theater production of Everyone's a Critic on April 5th at 6:30 and on April 6th at 1:30 p.m. Performance will be held in Richardson Hall in El Cajon. All seats for this mystery dinner theater show are $30 and include a three-course French-themed meal. The show is directed by Joel Gossett. On the brink of a famous food critic's first bite, the staff of an exclusive French restaurant has a traitor in the kitchen who appears to be bent on sabotaging the evening. You, the audience, while enjoying a delicious French three-course meal, must guess who the culprit is. Reservations can be made by visiting the website at thecircleplayers.org and click on tickets. The Main Avenue Revitalization Association invites you to the Taste of Lakeside, its upcoming fundraiser April 8th from 5 to 8 p.m. This event brings together 10 local restaurants, including Cali Stack, Ranch House, Octavio's, Eastbound, Yogurt Barn, The Parks, Caffeine Queens, and the VFW, offering attendees the opportunity to sample culinary delights. Tickets may be purchased from Mary's Donuts or from the Lakeside Historical Society on Saturdays or from any Main Avenue Revitalization Association member. All funds raised will be directly supporting downtown historic Lakeside. You're invited to join the 100th anniversary celebration of Mount Helix Park with a Roaring Twenties-themed party on April 12th from 4:30 to 8 p.m. in the Mount Helix Nature Theater. Enjoy delicious appetizers and dinner from Becker's Catering, followed by dueling pianos and dancing under the stars. Beer, wine, and soft drinks are also included. All tickets include shuttle service to and from the parking lot, entertainment, appetizers, dinner, dessert, beer, wine, and soft drinks. For tickets, visit mounthelixpark.org/100. That's Mount Helix, MTHELIX, park.org. The Ramona Valley Vintners Association and the Ramona Chamber of Commerce invite you to Cheers to the Valley Wine Festival on Saturday, April 5th from 12 to 4 p.m. at Beegent Ranch in Ramona. The event includes catered small bites, arts and craft vendors, live music by local artists, unlimited tastings from local wineries, and a complimentary tasting glass. For tickets and a list of participating wineries and vendors, you can visit RamonaChamber.com. An international aerobatics competition will be held at the Borrego Springs Airport Thursday through Saturday, April 10th through 12th, organized by the International Aerobatic Club's Chapter 36, or IAC 36. A highlight for viewers is Saturday's 4-minute freestyle flight set to music, usually involving smoke, flown by top pilots. Thursday is practice and registration, while Friday features contest flights all day long. You can also stop by the Propeller Bar and Grill, where you can enjoy food and drinks, plus a rooftop deck to view the flying. The IAC Chapter 36 is based in Borrego Springs and promotes precision aerobatics through coaching, competition, and camaraderie. The Borrego Airport boasts the world's finest permanent surface wavered aerobotics box. For a full schedule of events, visit iac36.org. Julian Farm and Orchard invites you to Daffodil Days, which continue each Friday, Saturday, and Sunday now through April 13th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. In addition to You Pick Daffodils, visitors can also enjoy other activities for a fee, including a petting zoo, rock climbing, swings, picnic area, a tractor-pulled hayride, and more. Find details at julianfarmandorchard.com. The City of Santee invites you to hop on over to Santee's Bunny Trail on Saturday, April 12th from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Santee Trolley Square. Guests can enjoy photos with the bunny, games, crafts, face painting, giveaways, and carnival rides. Fort Cross Adventures in Julian hosts its Spring Lilac Festival from April 19th through May 11th on Saturdays from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. and Sundays from noon to 5 p.m. General admission includes entry into a lilac maze, family farm area, and more. A festival activity package adds a wagon ride, treasure hunt, interactive reptile show, visits with farm animals, a hoedown and jug band show, painting craft, and lilac-themed candle dipping. Additional activities are available for a fee. Pre-registration for the Lilac Festival is advised, and you can get reservations at fortcross.com/lilac-festival. Visitors can also purchase fresh lilac bouquets at the farm stand 7 days a week from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Summers Past Farms in Flint Springs invites you to Sweet Pea Day. Saturday, April 19th, you can stroll through a towering, fragrant maze of these old-fashioned, dainty flowers, take photos, cut, and make your own bouquet from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. as long as the blooms last. Summers Pass Farms is located in Flint Springs between El Cajon and Alpine. You can get more information at summerspassfarms.com. The 61st Annual Lakeside Rodeo takes place April 24th through 27th at the Lakeside Rodeo Grounds. Events range from barrel racing to bull riding. All proceeds from the Lakeside Rodeo benefit youth and youth groups in Lakeside, such as scholarships for high school seniors, special needs summer camps, the 4-H Club, Future Farmers of America, book giveaways to students, scouting, journalism classes, auto mechanics instruction, youth sports, and the arts. For tickets and more details, you can visit lakesiderodeo.com. And finally, the 60th Annual Western Days Parade in Lakeside steps off starting at 9:35 a.m. on Saturday, April 26th. This year's parade along Main Avenue in downtown Lakeside honors hometown heroes. The parade is organized by the Lakeside Chamber of Commerce. More information is available at lakesidechamber.org. You can find more information on these and more events in our Festivals and Events section at eastcountymagazine.org and on our calendar. That's it for this week. We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, bringing you voices and views from across our inland region. You can find more local news and events, volunteer, and support our nonprofit news in the public interest at www.eastcountymagazine.org.
This is Juliet Sanders with a public service announcement from the city of La Mesa. La Mesa is introducing a pilot e-bike incentive program designed to encourage biking as a primary mode of transportation for those who live and work in La Mesa. Since transportation remains the largest contributor to air pollution and greenhouse gas emissions in the city, reducing car trips will help create cleaner air and a healthier community. Funded through a grant from San Diego Community Power, the city has partnered with two local bike shops to offer point-of-sale discount vouchers to make purchasing an approved electronic bike more affordable. By reducing upfront costs, the city aims to provide residents and employees with a healthy, convenient, and sustainable alternative to driving, making it easier to commute, run errands, and explore La Mesa. Applications are now open through April 14th. The city is offering two tiers of vouchers: $1,200 for income-qualified applicants, $800 for standard applicants. To be eligible, applicants must be 18 years or older and either live in La Mesa or work for a business within the city. Approved applicants will be required to complete a mandatory virtual e-bike safety class before receiving their voucher. Applications can be submitted online or in person at City Hall. Up to 150 applicants will be approved. Higher scores will be given to those who plan to use their e-bike frequently for commuting or errands within La Mesa. To support safe riding, the city is partnering with the San Diego County Bicycle Coalition to offer a series of free bike safety and educational events throughout the year. To register for the class, visit sdbikecoalition.org. More information is available through City of La Mesa.
Next up, we'll have some national news from Public News Service and some statewide news from California News Service.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
I've raised a lot of money for the next race that I assume I can't use for myself, but I'm not 100% sure.
President Donald Trump says he isn't joking about running for a third term. The Constitution expressly limits presidents to two. His allies, however, are reportedly exploring long-shot paths around the 22nd Amendment, such as calling another constitutional convention. Trump also says he's very angry with Vladimir Putin. The Russian president called for replacing the government of Ukraine with a UN body, which would halt progress on a peace deal. Trump is threatening tariffs on countries that buy Russian oil if ceasefire talks fail. The White House continues to downplay Signalgate. A new YouGov poll finds that 3 out of 4 Americans, including most Republicans, say the use of the encrypted but unsecured messaging app to discuss military operations is a serious problem. California Democratic Congressman Dave Min says it's not just a national security blunder, but also a violation of federal record-keeping law.
On Signal in the first place, they're supposed to be on secure government channels. And the obvious explanation, the only explanation, is that they're trying to set those disappearing messages so that they don't have to report to the American people what they're up to.
Many are calling for Congress to investigate why a dozen high-level administration officials use the text app and how a journalist came to be included in the thread. Getting the Republican leadership to agree to that looks extremely difficult, The White House continues to insist the detailed advance discussions of the military strike were not classified. New tariffs set to take effect Wednesday include 25% levies on goods from Mexico and Canada and 25% charge on imported cars and parts. UCLA economist Kimberly Clausing says that'll mean sharply higher prices for Americans.
On the consumer side, it's going to be the largest tax increase in my lifetime. And that's going to raise prices and reduce people's purchasing power.
Trump says he couldn't care less if manufacturers raise prices and says it'll boost American-made cars, although most of them include foreign parts. Folks are celebrating the International Trans Day of Visibility today, but with hundreds of bills targeting the rights of transgender people in the nation's legislatures, a Texas activist says for her it's more needed than ever. Jade Lenore LaDuff is the chief of staff at the Black and Trans-led Lavender Rights Project.
Especially for youth, to see that regardless of what's happening in our current political landscape, that we're still here, we're still advocating, we're still fighting.
Finally, special elections in Florida and Wisconsin tomorrow could prove how the Trump administration is being viewed by voters. Democrats hope to build on a victory in a Pennsylvania state Senate district they flipped after Trump won it by double digits last November. I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
The Trump administration has targeted the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, so advocates for people in rural communities are pressing California lawmakers to step in. President Donald Trump's new CFPB director has moved to close the agency, claiming it had been weaponized against certain industries and individuals. And the Republican-controlled House Financial Services Committee just voted to roll back a CFPB rule on high bank overdraft fees. Christine Chen Zinner is Senior Consumer Policy Counsel with the nonprofit Americans for Financial Reform.
This is a rule that would bring overdraft fees from $35 down to $5. That would now save families $5 billion a year, or $225 per household per year that pays these overdraft fees.
Rural communities are often considered banking deserts, with limited options for people to do their banking, making them more vulnerable to unfair business practices that have been regulated by the CFPB. Zinner calls on Representatives Adam Gray, Jim Costa, and David Valadao, all members of Congress from rural districts in the Central Valley, to oppose efforts to weaken banking rules.
They can either represent their constituents who need these protections, especially as they live in these rural banking deserts, or they could side with big banks. So this is really an opportunity to show who they answer to.
A recent report from the HEAL Food Alliance finds that since 2011, the CFPB has returned $21 billion to people who had been scammed and handled nearly 850,000 consumer complaints from the Golden State alone. Naveena Khanna is HEAL's executive director.
Weakening or eliminating the CFPB is going to harm rural communities and working families the most. We're trying to make sure that our policymakers defend us by defending the CFPB.
The CFPB has also worked to keep medical debt off people's credit reports and handled a deluge of fraud complaints after natural disasters like the LA wildfires. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to KNSJ, 89.1 FM, Descanso, the network for social justice.
Insurance rates are rising fast in California because of fires and floods linked to climate change, and now two new bills in Sacramento seek to make oil and gas companies pay. The Affordable Insurance and Climate Recovery Act would create legal pathways for homeowners, insurance companies, and the state insurance plan to sue and recover losses from oil and gas companies. Melissa Romero with California Environmental Voters says the companies misled lawmakers and the public.
The one group that hasn't paid their fair share in all of this is oil and gas companies. They knew since the 70s, the 80s, that their products were creating runaway climate change. They hid the science, they did nothing about it, and they continued to push an agenda that stymied a lot of efforts to switch over to clean energy.
The Western States Petroleum Association called the bills a way for politicians to capitalize on tragedy. The California Independent Petroleum Association has said the real culprits for the fires are arsonists, environmental lawsuits that prevent forest management, and cuts to firefighting budgets. Romero also supports the Polluters Pay Superfund bill, which would charge fossil fuel companies according to their role in climate change and invest in climate-resilient communities.
It requires the California Environmental Protection Agency to do a report about the actual cost, both looking backwards and forwards, that climate change has caused California in terms of our infrastructure and disaster response.
Proponents of the bills complained that insurance ratepayers and taxpayers are hard hit by climate disasters. The state's FAIR plan, the insurer of last resort, has assessed insurers and ratepayers $1 billion for LA wildfire claims so far. Meanwhile, State Farm is likely to get regulators' permission to raise homeowners' insurance rates by 22% after a hearing on April 8th. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
This is John Tidwell with a public service announcement from the City of El Cajon. The City of El Cajon has launched Via San Diego El Cajon, a new app-based on-demand transit program designed to expand transportation access for residents and visitors. Service went live on March 17th, and all rides are free for the first month. Via San Diego allows anyone within the El Cajon service zone to book a shared ride in the app, which is available in the App Store and Google Play, or by calling 619-413-9986. With the program, residents can affordably and conveniently reach local destinations such as work, shopping, education, appointments, regional transit hubs, and more without needing a private car. Here's how it works. Once someone books a ride, Via's technology matches them with other riders headed in the same direction in one small electric vehicle, creating quick and efficient shared trips. Riders are directed to virtual bus stops, typically a short walk away from their pickup and drop-off location, which minimizes detours and keeps trips running smoothly for everyone. The program will operate Monday to Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. The free ride period ends April 17th, after which trips will cost $2.50 each. Riders with mobility issues can request door-to-door services and wheelchair-accessible vehicles. Brian Nelson at Via San Diego says the program is thrilled to partner with El Cajon to launch this zero-emission, tech-enabled microtransit program as part of the broader Via San Diego platform. El Cajon's decision follows a similar initiative by City Heights and North Park Main Street, which launched the Mid-City Go program using the same Via San Diego app in January. Via San Diego El Cajon is funded by a $1.5 million award from the Clean Mobility Options Voucher Pilot Program, with additional support from the California Energy Commission's Clean Transportation Program. For more information on Via San Diego options locally, you can visit city.ridewithvia.com and type in your address.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, AK Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine Radio Show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show.
You're listening to KNSJ, 89.1 FM, Descanso, the network for social justice.